Good morning, everyone.
Well, the old joke was, thank God for Arkansas.
Morning, everyone.
I'm Paul Kengor from Grove City College, and I'm chair of the first panel today, which is titled, How Did We Get to the Crossroads? And it will include Glenn Moots and Will Anthony Hay, Mark Kaltoff. So each of these three will have about 18 minutes to talk, after which we'll do some Q&A that goes on until about 11:30. And I've been told to take about 12 to 15 minutes to set the stage both for the panel and also a little bit for the general theme of the day. So I'll start that now. Of course, I think, and I think many of you as conservatives agree, that when we talk of this crossroads, it's because of what's happening right now with the station conductor, in a way, right? With the president, the Oval Office, and also the current Congress. Today we have a leadership with a very different view of America, its founding, the very notion of America as an exceptional nation, which is also the title of the final panel here today on America as an exceptional nation. So I thought I'd underscore that point by drawing a contrast, and it's a rather stark contrast, I think, between our current leadership and also the president who represented America, which was at really the high point of conservatism, the ideology of interest to the people in this room, and also the person who I've focused on more than any other person in my academic study, and that's Ronald Reagan. For conservatives back then, under Reagan in the 1980s, it wasn't America at the crossroads, but it was mourning in America, was it not? So what I share from Reagan this morning might seem a bit nostalgic. I hope it's uplifting, but I think it's also, frankly, a little bit depressing in light of where we actually stand this morning. So I'll start us at the founding here by starting with Ronald Reagan on the American founding and how Ronald Reagan interpreted this and applied it to his vision of America. Throughout American history, our presidents have invoked the founding and the founding fathers. Our recent presidents have done that quite a bit. I thought about a year or two ago that I would take a look, try to make this as scientific as possible, and get a feel for literally how much the presidents invoked the founders, how often they cited the founders. And now, thanks to the glory of modern technology, the presidential documents, the public papers of the presidents of the United States, are actually available online. So now you can do keyword searches on these things. And the presidential papers, it's published by GPO. It's a comprehensive collection of every presidential speech, statement, press release, interview, you name it. So I went through, I took a list of the main founding fathers, George Washington, Madison, Hamilton, the people you would think of, about a dozen of them altogether. And I ran tabulations on different recent presidents to see how often they cited these folks, and more importantly, how they cited them. I came up with John F. Kennedy, Richard Nixon, LBJ, Bill Clinton, all cited the presidents, the founders, all cited the founders somewhere in the range of about 100 to 200 times. George H.W. Bush around 60 times. The lowest were Carter and Ford, which were under 30 times, which is kind of odd when you think about it because these were the bicentennial presidents. So you'd almost expect them to be talking about the founding more than any other. And on Ronald Reagan, I counted 850 citations of the American founders. But I think the more intriguing question here is not just the volume, but how Reagan invoked these founders. So how did he? Four fundamental ways. Reagan went to the founders on behalf of, one, emphasizing the importance of faith to America and its people. Two, the principles of limited government. Three, the exceptionalism of America. America is a shining city upon a hill with a special destiny for all of mankind. And four, in contrasting the system of the United States with the system of the Soviet Union, something I think that our president could do today with some of our adversaries like Iran, for example, drawing that explicit contrast, the different understandings of freedom and liberty. But most important for Reagan, the founders went back not only to 1776, but to 1620, to 1630, to John Winthrop, to those pilgrims, to that crew of the Arabella. So I thought I'd give a few examples this morning, just for a few minutes, and then turn it over to these guys on how Reagan did that. Reagan started doing this back in the 1950s, not just as president in the 1980s, but all the way back into the 1950s. And one of my favorite examples, which sort of sets the stage for the next 30, 40 years of Reagan's public life, is one that none of us saw. It was seen only by 250 women at a tiny little college called William Woods College in Fulton, Missouri, in June 1952, where Ronald Reagan, an actor who at that point was still a registered Democrat, gave the commencement speech. They kicked it off that day, kicked off the ceremony with a rendition of America the Beautiful. It's a classic Reagan, is it not? And that was no doubt a Reagan's request, because the title of Reagan's talk that day was titled America the Beautiful. So Reagan began by affirming this, quote, "America is less of a place than an idea. It, the idea of America, is nothing but the inherent love of freedom in each one of us. And the great ideological struggle that we find ourselves engaged in today is not a new struggle. It's the same old battle. We met it under the name of Hitlerism. We met it under the name of Kaiserism. And we have met it back through the ages in the name of every conqueror that has ever set upon a course of establishing his rule over mankind. It is simply the idea, the basis of this country and of our religion, the idea of the dignity of man, the idea that deep within the heart of each one of us is something so godlike and precious that no individual or group has a right to impose its or his will upon the people so well as they can decide for themselves." In the next line of Reagan's speech that day, he talked about America as a sort of divinely selected, chosen nation. "I, in my own mind, have thought of America as a place in the divine scheme of things that was set aside as a promised land. I believe that God, in shedding his grace on this country, has always, in the divine scheme of things, kept an eye on our land and guided it as a promised land." You could take that exact passage from Reagan and find it again and again and again and again in speech after speech, all the way to literally the final moments in the Oval Office. January 11th, 1989, Reagan's farewell address. "I've spoken of the shining city all my political life. In my mind, it was a tall, proud city built on rocks, stronger than oceans, windswept, God blessed." I found that Reagan seems to have initially gotten these ideas, these conceptions, back at the church that he attended in Dixon, Illinois in the 1920s, under a pastor by the name of Ben Cleaver, who spoke this way, as did Ronald Reagan's mother, Nell Reagan, as well. And it's a very different view than I think another president from Illinois heard from the congregation in his church not that long ago, where the version was not at all, as this pastor said, "God bless America? No, 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 no. God," you can fill in the blank. Very, very different view. So in that sense, there's a crossroads of sorts in Illinois as well that took place. This concept of America as a blessed nation is crucial to understanding Reagan's thinking about the country, its path, where it should go. And of course, part of that is the shining city, the idea of the shining city upon a hill. This is language that's rooted in the Old Testament, it's in the New Testament, it's in Isaiah, it's in Matthew. Reagan explained it this way, his own words. "Standing on the deck of the Arabella in 1630 off the Massachusetts coast, John Winthrop said, 'We shall be as a city upon a hill. The eyes of all people are upon us, so that if we deal falsely with our God in this work we have undertaken and cause him to withdraw his present help from us, we shall be made a story and a byword throughout the world.'" So he spoke of America not just as a city on a hill, but think about this, as a shining city upon a hill. Think of that image. A shining city on a hill is a beacon. It projects its light, a light upon the nations, a light unto the nations. Reagan saw America as that beacon of freedom and liberty that, at least in that sense, could shed that vision on liberty to the other countries of the world. He also said that the core to this unique place forged by these unique founders was a basic understanding of the proper foundational function of government, which in his view is very simple, the unalienable rights, life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. Reagan said these rights were the explicit promise of the Declaration. And quoting a theologian, he said this, This is a principle for eternity. It is America's deepest treasure. Corollaries of the great proposition at the heart of Western civilization that every person is a res sacra, a sacred reality, and as such is entitled to the opportunity of fulfilling those great human potentials with which God has endowed man. That's his view of the founding. President Obama does not invoke the founders nearly as much, and I've noticed hardly any cases at all. But in the inaugural address and also in the recent National Prayer Breakfast a few weeks ago, you'll notice this. He talks about liberty and equality. You hear those two words, not life and liberty, but liberty and equality. Go back to the inaugural and you'll see that there. And in that sense, liberty and equality is a really different, strikes me as a very different declaration altogether, if you know what I'm talking about. There's much more I could say on Reagan, but I want to turn it over to these guys. I have 850 Reagan citations on the founders, so to pare it down to a few is quite a chore. But for Reagan, America was at a crossroads in his lifetime as well. And that was in the mid-60s all the way until the 1970s. And he talked about this in his Time for Choosing speech, October 27, 1964. That speech is about America being at a crossroads and making a choice. And he said there, "We are told that the problem is too complex for a simple answer. They are wrong. There is no easy answer, but there is a simple answer. We must have the courage to do what we know is morally right. And this policy of accommodation," and here this would be a bellwether not only of what was going on in the 60s, but the accommodation through detente as well. "This policy of accommodation asks us to accept the greatest possible immorality. We are being asked to buy our safety from the threat of the bomb by selling into permanent slavery our fellow human beings enslaved behind the Iron Curtain. Don't do detente because that accommodates the Soviets and cedes Eastern Europe to the Soviet sphere of influence. That sells our Eastern European brethren down the river. To tell them to give up their hope of freedom because we are ready to make a deal with their slave masters. Alexander Hamilton warned us that a nation which can prefer disgrace to danger is prepared for a master and deserves a master. Admittedly, there is a risk in any course we follow. Choosing the high road cannot eliminate that risk. Should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery rather than dare the wilderness? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have refused to fire the shot heard around the world? Are we to believe that all the martyrs of history died in vain?" Reagan concluded here that America must choose courage over accommodation. You know the lines well. Told Americans they have a rendezvous with destiny. Together we could preserve for our children, quote, this last best hope of man on earth, or rather, we could sentence them to take the first step into 1,000 years of darkness. If we tried but failed, if they tried but failed, said Reagan, at least their children and children's children could say of us that we justified our brief moment here. We did all that could be done. And he finished that speech, which is also the end of his 1965 book, Where's the Rest of Me?, which is his first biography. He puts that speech and adds to it as the appendix at the end of that book. He finished it by quoting another founder, so to speak, Tom Paine. "We have it in our power to begin the world all over again. Because these, of course, are the times that try men's souls." So for Reagan, the answer at America's crossroads was the America that the founders had conceived. He believed that we got it right a long time ago. What we should do then and should do now, I think, is turn back to that original vision. Make a turn at the founders towards 1776. Go back to the roots to recover, not to progress to some new nebulous sort of change. Right now, I think we're straying from that position, and I think it's incumbent upon us in particular as educators, as professors, as writers, as policy folks, to help redirect the nation toward that exceptional position.